We're now beginning a study of the 46th Psalm. The title to this psalm states that it is to the chief musician for the sons of Korah, a song upon Alamoth. Now, we've had this phrase to the chief musician many times before, and it simply means that the person in charge of the music service of the church, of the congregation of Israel, was to take this psalm and to use it to the very best advantage for the worship of the church to God. For the sons of Korah probably indicates that it was one of the sons of Korah, one of the descendants of Korah, which were deeply involved in the music service of the church. They probably wrote this psalm. This psalm is not ascribed to David, and many Bible scholars do not feel that David wrote this psalm. Then the last phrase of the title says, a song upon Alamoth. The word song is used in the title, and it's used in the title of several of the psalms. I don't know that it has any particular significance, meaning that this is more of a song than any of the other psalms are. But the word Alamoth basically means virgins. And it would seem to indicate that as this song was sung, that the female voices, the high-pitched voices, were to be used in it rather than the bass or the baritone-type voices. A song upon Alamoth. Many Bible scholars believe that these psalms that are attributed to the sons of Korah were written after the time of David. And that's very likely in this particular psalm. It is not possible now to determine the occasion on which the psalm was written. It was evidently written in view of trouble or of some impending calamity. Apparently some national calamity or some time when the nation was in danger and when it was felt that the only refuge, their last hope, was in God. It would seem now to be very likely that the psalm was composed when wars were raging abroad in the earth, when the nations were convulsed, and when Jerusalem itself was besieged and threatened with ruin. The main thought of the psalm, the central idea of it, is that amidst these general and far-spreading agitations and convulsions among the nations of the earth, the people of God were safe. They had nothing to fear, even though those convulsions and agitations should be multiplied and increased, even though they should be carried so far that the very foundation of the earth should be shaken and the mountains removed and carried into the midst of the sea. There was to them an infinite protector. There were unfailing sources of peace. They had nothing to dread. It was their duty, therefore, to be calm, still, confiding, for God would be exalted among the nations of the earth. It is possible that the psalm refers to the invasion of the land of Israel by Sennacherib and to the miraculous destruction of his host, as is recorded in 2 Kings chapter 19 and in Isaiah chapters 36 and 37. All the circumstances in that invasion, the tumultuous host summoned for the war in Isaiah 36:2, the overthrow of numerous nations by their armies, Isaiah 36:18-21, the siege of Jerusalem itself, Isaiah 36:2, the confidence of Hezekiah and of his people in God when the city was besieged, Isaiah 37:14-20, and the final overthrow of the Assyrian host by the angel of the Lord, Isaiah 37:36, agree well with all the statements in the psalm and seem well to illustrate the psalm, though it is not possible now to determine with precise accuracy to what particular historical occasion this psalm does have reference to. The circumstances in that invasion, though, are so similar to those supposed in this psalm that perhaps we should not be likely to err in supposing that the psalm had reference to that occasion. But regardless to which occasion this psalm does refer, we can still get the same basic thought, the same great principles that should be applied to us, even though we do not know precisely which occasion the writer of this psalm had in mind when it was composed. So beginning with verse 1 of chapter 46 of Psalms, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Now the first three verses of this psalm actually are showing that God is refuge and strength, and that this is available to his people. He uses this to aid or to assist his people. And so the statement is made, God is our refuge and strength. The word refuge means shelter. It actually has reference to a place, a place to which someone could go to seek shelter, such as a rock or a fortress or a wall. And so God is referred then as being that to his people. He is our refuge. Regardless of what the problems may be, regardless of how great our trials may be, we have this continual source of refuge, of shelter. God is our refuge and strength. The word strength simply means that God does have power, and this power or this strength then is transmitted to us who are his followers. We can take advantage of it. We can use it like it is ours, so that when we have need of shelter or refuge, when we have need of strength, if we be followers of God, then we have this strength that we need. Since it does belong to God, it doesn't mean that it's not available to us, because he is our refuge and our strength. And verse 1 further says, a very present help in trouble. A very present help. Now this word present means primarily or basically to be near. When God is present, he is near. But a more clear meaning is that he is proven. He is proven to be a help. Or the word help means aid. He's an assistance. So he is a proven assistance to us. A very proven assistance, which means that it is emphatically true that God is proven to be an assistance, proven to be a help, proven to be help in trouble. The word trouble, of course, includes all of our problems. Whatever difficulty we may find ourselves in, whatever our straits are, whatever our problems and setbacks may be, can be included in the word trouble. So whatever our troubles happen to be, God is a very proven source of help during that time of trouble. But this is a very wonderful verse then, stating that God is our refuge and our strength. He is a very near, a very proven source of help in time of trouble. Now we as humans need to have this. We need to have this assurance. We need to have this quality of knowing that we do have some help when we need it. It's just like if we got into any kind of a problem, or if we were afraid of being in any kind of a problem, knowing that there was somebody who was able to bail us out, somebody who is able to see us through it, somebody who is able to take care of whatever circumstances may arise. Not only does he have the ability to do it, the strength to do it, but he's made it available to us. It's a source that we can have and use and apply to ourselves. So it's a very wonderful statement, giving us encouragement, giving us a sense of peace, a sense of security, a sense of strength that we need very muchly as human beings. And it's given here very plain in this psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Then verse 2 says, therefore will we not fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. He's saying in this verse very plainly that regardless of what happens, we're not going to fear. And the word therefore shows that the reason for not having the fear is because God is our refuge and strength. He is a very present help in time of trouble. And so because of that, therefore, we will not fear. Regardless of what happens to us, regardless of what kind of great commotions, what kind of great upheavals come about, we're not going to fear. And he gives some examples of things that could happen and that may very well be happening they will endure and still depend upon God and not have to fear. He says, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. If there were a literal removing of the earth, how this would come about would be difficult for us to imagine, but he names here that the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. These things that we've known all of our lives and have been here for centuries and unchanged, unmoved, if they should just be literally carried out and dumped into the sea and vast changes be made. Now, we know that this would only literally happen in the very end of the world. Whenever the end time comes and the world is going to be destroyed, it'll be melted with a fervent heat, and all these things are going to be changed drastically. then that is the only literal time this is going to happen. But he could be talking about figurative times, figurative happenings. And when governments fall, when kingdoms have their boundaries changed, whenever the rulers of nations change, and the fortunes that people have amassed collapse, their lives are drastically changed. This, then, could be adequately described by the earth being removed and the mountains being carried into the midst of the sea. It would certainly coincide with the invasion of Sennacherib, when he had already conquered several nations, and now he was centering his force upon the area of Jerusalem. The world had been removed, so to speak. Mountains had been carried into the midst of the sea and were no more. These other nations didn't even exist now that Sennacherib had conquered them and removed them from being. Now his force was centered upon them, those in Jerusalem, and so they could say, "We will not fear, though all this has happened. These great calamities have occurred. We're not going to fear." And this principle certainly does apply to us today. It carries over into our age, this present time. We have things happen in our lives that seem like there are so vast, violent upheavals. It would be no more of a change to us if the mountains were carried into the sea. And so we then can say, like the psalmist said here, we will not fear though these things happen. These great upheavals in our lives. And we never know what's in store for us. What's in store for us with our, maybe our own personal selves, our own personal health. We do not know what's in store for us, for our husbands or our wives. What's going to happen to them. What kind of a calamity may occur. For some people, their husband or wife may dissolve their marriage in the eyes of the law and may leave them for someone else. And they don't have any control over this situation. It's a terrible, tragic, violent upheaval in their lives. For others, their husband or wife may have some kind of a serious illness that will incapacitate them. They may lose their ability to make competent judgments. They may have to be even put in an institution of some kind. They may lose all their ability to earn any kind of a living. They may have very expensive hospital bills or other kind of bills. And here again, it seems like that the earth has just been removed and the mountains are carried into the midst of the sea. Well, when these things happen, we can say like the psalmist, therefore will we not fear. We can also have other things happen to our families, like our children get involved in difficulties that we have no intention for them to get into. We didn't teach them to do this, but nevertheless it happens. And so then we find ourselves in the position of having to deal with these problems and having to bear the effect of these things. And it's as though the earth had been removed. It's as though the mountains had been carried into the midst of the sea. There's such violent upheavals in our lives, such drastic changes, such a violation of our principles that we can hardly bear it. But here again we can say, we will not fear, for the Lord is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. He's a near and proven assistance to us in this time of trouble. And then he further describes this in verse 3, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled. And this word trouble means to boil or to foam. The waters of the sea that the mountains have been carried into, these waters are in a violent upheaval themselves. They are going through some kind of a churning action that would just completely dissolve those mountains. And though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, that is, the mountains are affected by this, they shake with the swelling thereof, we see that nothing is secure, nothing is stable, the world itself is in a violent upheaval, we still are not going to fear. Now this has happened many, many times in the course of history. As we think back to such times as World War II, in the areas of Europe and in the Pacific, there were people that had everything completely changed. They were taken into concentration camps. They lost all of their holdings. They lost their country, their home. Their family was destroyed or divided. Vast changes were made in their lives, and changes they couldn't even have imagined occurring. And the world was falling on every side of them. And here would be a very adequate place to use this thought, to use this principle that's taught here in this psalm. But regardless of what happens to us, we can always depend upon this principle taught here. But we're not going to fear regardless of what happens. Now, if we do seem to live a rather calm and secure and stable life, if we've been blessed with that, remember, there is still yet coming a time in which this world is going to be destroyed. Nothing here is going to last. Nothing is going to be permanent. Everything is going to be destroyed except for the kingdom of heaven. And so the only way we can get through that time of upheaval, that time of the removing of the mountains to the sea and the melting of everything on this earth and the fervent heat that's going to be here, the only way we can get by that time is to have the Lord as our refuge, the Lord as our strength, God as our very present help in the time of trouble. And then even in that time, the end time of this earth, we will not fear because of this very close association that we have with God. So these first three verses are showing that God is our refuge and our strength. And they end with the word Selah, which is a very appropriate time to put that word in. That means there's a change in the sense or a pause in the sense of the psalm. And then, beginning in verse 4, he's going to show how that God does console his people, even though they are in these great, very violent times of upheaval and commotion. Verse 4 says, "There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High." In this fourth verse, he begins to describe the security, the safety, the well-being of the people of God, even though these great calamities were happening round about them in the rest of the world. He talks about the city of God here, which would be the city of Jerusalem at the time this psalm was written, but now it's going to be the church. Wherever the church is, that is the city of God. So he says there is a river, and the idea of introducing this river is to show that there are great blessings now associated with being by this river. And we have this alluded to several times in the Bible, even in Revelation, when he talks about the new Jerusalem, the heavenly place. There is a river there. We think of this river as being something that can give life, the waters of life. Any place we see a river, we see abundance of life around it, more trees, more greenery, more animals in that vicinity. So there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God. Now this is an allusion to a river that is flowing close to the city of God, and then it has streams or canals that come out through it that course throughout the city that give all parts of the city water. It makes the gardens and the flowers of the city in abundance, and there is no want for water because of this. The city is well watered from the streams or the canals of this river. So there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. Now, as he mentions the city of God, this is the place, of course, where God's people are dwelling. This is where God's people are. And as he mentions that, then he also at the same time connects with that the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. He's talking about the tent where the tabernacle was, or the tent of the tabernacle. And this later would be applicable to the temple. It can mean temple. And he says tabernacles, and the fact that that's in the plural doesn't destroy the idea of the temple, because the temple had two major parts that were holy places. There was the holy place where the priests carried out their functions, and then the most holy place in which the high priest went once a year to offer atonement for the people. So it can be referred to in the plural. So the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. This is where God's temple was. This is where God's worship was. And of course, today in the city of God, in the church, where God's people do dwell, there we find the most holy place of God. There we find what can properly be regarded as the temple. The church has access to the holy place and the most holy place. Although we know that our Savior is the high priest, and he is in the most holy place, we have access to him if we're in the church. So, certainly, the temple of God is where the people of God are. It says in verse 5, God is in the midst of her. So whatever happens round about, whatever kind of great turmoils, whatever calamities, whatever destructions are going on in the world round about, God is in the midst of this city of God. He is in the midst of this temple. He is in the midst of His people. And so they're going to have a certain amount of protection, a certain amount of security because of that. He further says, "She shall not be moved." Of course, this is talking about the city of God, the place where God's people dwell. She shall not be moved. So regardless of the great calamities that are happening, this is going to be a secure place. This is going to be a safe place. We can always rest assured that if we're in the church, we're in the hands of God. God is going to absolutely give us the victory. This is also alluded to when we think about the kingdom of God, which is the church, of course. The kingdom that God has established, it's the one thing that's going to stand whenever this earth is destroyed. We, according to Hebrews, are receiving a kingdom which shall not be moved. This kingdom is not going to be moved. It's going to remain sure and steadfast even whenever the world is destroyed. It says God shall help her in that right early. The phrase "that right early" means early in the morning or at the first sign of day. So the help of God is going to come early. And this may be an allusion to the fact that when Sennacherib's army did surround Jerusalem and it was threatening to siege the city and to actually destroy them, and then God did intervene and caused 185,000 of these Assyrians to die, it was discovered early in the morning that these enemies had died. And that could very well fit that situation if this is what this psalm is referring to. But the idea is that early in the morning, God's going to be there and assist. Well, we're going to close our lesson at that point. At our next study, we'll begin with the 6th verse of the 46th psalm. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.